I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's Monday. It's overcast in London. Hey, what's new? But don't worry, because we got a packed show for you. We're going to talk about Arsenal. Big win for them.
Yes,
away big, against big. Leicester, Chelsea and United, Barcelona and Sevilla. But one place to start, and that is in the eternal city of Rome. Jules, Milan go there on the back of four games without a win. Inter have won earlier in the day, so they're 7 points clear. They need this win.
Yeah.
Pioli makes the big call. He drops the captain, Alessio Romagnoli, and puts in Chelsea Lonifi, Kaio Tomori. And then they open a can of whoop-ass on Roma for the first half hour.
For the first half, really. They were so good, so dominant, the way they went forward. Ibrahimovic, Rebic playing together. Front, Çalhanoğlu, who I don't think had his best game, but still, they had bodies there. They had people. Kessié was so dominant in midfield. They score on a penalty. By the way, you'd be happy because Zlatan Ibrahimovic let Franck Kessié take the penalty.
Yeah, amazing behavior. Really after good. All the ones he's missed. And about time.
It was just about time.
Although there was a moment when, you know, they created so many chances early, like Ibrahimovic.
Yeah.
I think at least two that you would expect him to bury. I mean, the one with the back heel. I appreciate your slot and you're going to do the back heel.
Because when Morata does that with Juventus, he gets slaughtered.
Yeah.
Because it's Ibra. People say, oh, yeah, look, you know, it's...
You should not have done that. If you're going to do that, yeah.
Just
take another touch and put it away.
Exactly.
And realize what you're doing. You
exactly.
Know?
So early in the game as well.
Roma looked as if they got back into it later with Vertu. Rebic scoring a great goal in the second half.
Yeah.
But again, Pioli making the big calls. I'm not a Çalhanoğlu guy, as you know. And he's been really poor since coming back from injury.
Yeah.
Pioli yanks him at halftime and sends on Brahim Diaz. You know, like, this is the kind of progressive stuff that Milan should be doing if they want to get back into it. Remember what got you there.
Yeah.
Don't just go with the big names, the veterans.
And even Romagnoli and Tomori, that worked.
I know you can say... That's the other example of it.
Yeah, you can say...
I love Alessio Romagnoli, but you've been bad for a long time.
Yeah, and you can say it was only Borja Mayoral against them and blah, blah, blah. But Tomori was good. They were solid and Verratti scored a great goal. Apart from that, there's not much from Roma either into the game that put them in trouble.
A word on Roma. Obviously, I've been giving him a pass because, you know, you're without Zaniolo and Dzeko up front. You're without Smalling and Ibanez at the back. He got, I think, the system wrong with the two men in midfield. He did adjust it. But this is still a good run, a good man. I can't say enough good things about him.
Watching the game, I thought that he took... So Roma were fourth before the game. For Fonseca to take this team with those, they have got average players. When the stars are not there, this is an average. It's a team with average players.
Yeah.
To take them to fourth in Serie A, I was like, wow, okay.
He's making a ton of lemonade with those.
Yeah,
lemons,
it's good. And when the big players come back, they're going to get better. Of course, they will.
I want to touch upon Ibra because he came off injured. As you know, he's going to the Sanremo Music Festival this week. We think, as far as we know, it's not the kind of injury that stops him from singing. a lot of stuff has been said about
this,
but. As a wise man says, he missed a great chance to keep his mouth shut last week.
Big time.
And this involves LeBron James. In case you missed it. Of all people. Yeah, remember that he had some simpatico going when he went to LA. Oh, you have a king, but now the emperor's here.
Yeah.
But he came out and he said something that, you know, he said, I don't think athletes should get involved in politics and they shouldn't talk about it. And then he called out LeBron James by name. Mm. And look, I think LeBron gave the perfect answer. And I'm not a LeBron fan. Not that I don't dislike him. I like his basketball, but I'm not like... But he came out and he said, look, I talk about what I know about. I talk about inequality and racism and the stuff that I lived,
I
went through.
He said, yeah.
I mean, first of all, for me personally, I don't have a problem if you use your platform as a celebrity to talk about stuff that's beyond your sport, right? Even if it's stuff that you've got nothing to do with, right? Gary Lineker has nothing to do with immigration, but if he wants to talk about, hey, it's your right. It's a free world.
Yeah, completely.
But that's not what LeBron did. LeBron doesn't go out and talk about monetary policy. He doesn't talk about the impact of the U.S. Air Force strike on Iran on geopolitics.
No. Nope.
He talks about stuff that he knows, that he is personally involved in with his school, with...
Yeah.
And this was not clever from me.
No, and like LeBron said in his response, said I'm the wrong guy to go at because I do my homework. I mean, like you said, he's got a school. He's got 300 children in his school. Imagine if LeBron was not reacting, using his voice and his status to talk about those things that the children in his school are going through. They would be disappointed in LeBron. And on Ibra, one of Ibra's idols is Muhammad Ali, right? and now you're telling me, oh, I don't like people who talk outside of their sport. I don't like. And even when he used to talk about Ali in the past, you'd say, but Ali was the greatest, not just on the ring, but off the ring as well. And now he's telling me, oh, I don't like LeBron because he talks off the court. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Get your story right.
To be clear on this, and younger listeners may not know this, Muhammad Ali is a guy who he went way outside his lane, right? Yeah. Talking about the war in Vietnam and stuff like that. And he ended up going to prison as a result of this, right? I'd love to know what, if Ibra could time travel, I'd love to know what Muhammad Ali would have said to that. Yeah. I would like to see now, look, I don't think Ibra is a bad guy. I think this is an incredibly tone-deaf thing to say. What would be nice now, don't just tweet one of those no room for racism type things, something anodyne. Come out and say something, say about the context you didn't realize. Yeah. Come out and tell us, because Ibra himself has spoken out
against racism in Sweden, social issues. So himself has done it. I don't know why suddenly he had a go at LeBron out of nowhere.
I don't know. Look, there's a lot of microphones in front of Ibra, and sometimes when you talk a lot, sometimes you end up saying stuff that you would later regret. Yeah. All right, Jules, let's get a little more granular now on this, because as far as Milan are concerned, it's interesting. There's some people who, and this kind of annoyed me a little bit. I hate it when people talk about the past out of context and use it to inform the present, right? So various theories about why Milan were first and why they're not first now, right? Oh, they had a magical 2020. Now it's 2021. Okay. Or Pioli always starts well. Oh, and really? Then he does badly, and then he gets sacked. Well, you know,
well, not last season. Well, because he finished pretty well last season. That's why he's still in the job.
No, but the argument is that he starts well at a new club, right?
Oh, right. Sorry.
And then he does badly.
The start of the season. Yeah, yeah.
And then he gets sacked. Well, you know what? Most people do badly before they get sacked. Any manager who gets sacked,
it's
right?
Because they must have
it's
done badly,
doing
at, some
badly
point.
At some point, right? But how long they do well for is a totally different. Completely. It's a totally different issue. These all seem very silly. Now, it's undeniable, I think, that Milan were trending downwards. It's undeniable that whatever metrics or analytics you look at, they were making mistakes. And you can say they're regressing to their mean because some of these players are very good. Some of them perhaps less so. But I thought this was just such a big, big reaction from them.
It was. After especially losing the last two games like they did, and the Inter being top and putting pressure after beating Genoa before. And I think that's where you show your character. Let's not forget that Ismail Benacer has been out for, on and off for 4 months now or something
basically,
like that?
Yeah.
Which is technically the best player maybe, or certainly him and Kessié are the best partnership in midfield that they can have. And it's not the same when he's in there, in the way you control the game, in what you create with the ball, just everything. And I know everybody has players missing. It's not just them. But I think to show that kind of character in a game like this where you know that Roma are dangerous, certainly on the counter-attack, and you knew exactly what kind of game you were expecting and facing, I thought it was good. And then the dynamic goes on again. They will have to play against United now that we know in the Europa League, which could be a very tricky thing. What do? Do you have to prioritise either the Europa League against United or the league? What do you rotate? You can't certainly put best team on the Thursday against United, best team on the Sunday in the league, best team again in the second leg against United, and then best team again. So you'll have to make choices.
I think the good thing is I think United will end up making choices as well, because you look at that table, you look at where United are. I mean, I think United will finish top four, but I think, let's not forget, they've gone on a good run when they've played some of the younger players, when they've had. And I think they steeled themselves for this. You know, they brought in a bunch of guys in January, right? They brought in Tomori, they brought in Mete, they brought in Mario Mandzukic.
Yeah.
So those extra bodies, I think, are there for that. I think it's going to be interesting now how long Zlatan is out for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, do you trust Rafael Leao up front? Do you play Rebic up front? Do you dust off Mandzukic?
Yeah.
So he's got different options, but what's important is that they maintain that kind of front foot pressing that they've done. In terms of the title, It's 4 points. I don't want to say 4 points is nothing. I know Conte and Inter have the advantage and no European Cups and all this stuff. But I don't think this is by any means a foregone conclusion. And I'll tell you who can be key when Bennacer is out. Sandro Tonali has not been good since coming to Milan. But I thought he played a lot better against Roma. Yeah. He can help them turn the corner.
He did. I still think, and again, watching Inter against Genoa, they're so confident. They know exactly what they do. And because it's Inter and Conte, you just don't know. At some point, you know, they're going to go mad and drop points in the last minute of a game or something. But I still think that 4 points with no derby anymore, so you can't take 3 points away from Inter. I just think I still think Inter, for me, are a favourite, and I still think they're going to do it.
All right, let me ask you this question now on the title race, because this is something I've wondered myself. What would be a bigger loss, Inter losing Lukaku or Milan losing Ibra? Who's more dependent on their centre forward?
That's a good question. We've seen when Ibra has been out already, Milan did well. They did well without him. And we haven't seen really Inter without Lukaku.
I think maybe
the Lukaku out would be a far bigger blow to Inter and to Conte and the way they play and how he links up everything more than Ibra.
That's where I'm going with this. And I'm just, you know, I'm not, I hope both are fit every minute between now and the end of the season. Obviously, I'm going to see them. But I think that is potentially another spanner in the works, because Inter become very different if you're playing with two little guys like Alexis Sanchez and Lautaro up front. On Roma, I know you like your Techers. I know you like your Jordan Vera too.
It's simply because he came to Aston Villa when he was quite young and he had a really good time at Nantes. And I felt they'd never either give him the time or had the patience with him for him to adapt and everything. Only stayed one season, then went back home on loan to Saint-Etienne and then to Fiorentina, where really he showed why he's so good. I mean, I thought he had all the qualities to do well in the Premier League. And what we see, he runs with the ball, he's so intelligent, the movement is great, he's got that intensity, he can run forever, I think. And he can score goals. He's got 10 goals in 22 Serie A game this season. I know he's on penalties, but still, it's pretty remarkable.
So the interesting thing about Roma, and this is a switch he made in the game, is they effectively play a 3-4-2-1 system, right? We've seen a little bit of that with Barcelona in the past. You know, the box where you've got Villar and Veretout. And then ahead of them, you've got Mkhitaryan and Pellegrini, now, that one of the interesting things about Roma this season is that they've basically beaten almost every smaller club that they face. And their record against the top 7 or 8 is terrible. One of the theories is that, well, against smaller clubs, they're going to sit off you more. And, you know, Veretout and Villar can just sit in front and just, they're not going to be overrun in midfield.
Yeah.
Against bigger clubs, you can't just have two guys because you will get overrun, right? You need that extra man. And he adjusted it by dropping Pellegrini deeper. Is it as simple as that?
I don't know. I thought at times they lacked a bit of experience and a bit of vice. The game against Inter when they drew 2-2, for example, it's a game that they should have won every single day. So maybe they're still learning. And again, I still think that this is some of those defenders are average. You know, I think Paulo Lopez.
The ones who played,
ones who played, sorry, against Milan. Paulo Lopez, I think he's a good keeper, but it's nothing exceptional. He's not Jan Oblak or anything like that.
And he made some big mistakes.
And he makes some mistakes too. So I still think that, like, in a team like this, Veretout has a lot of jobs to do, and against big teams I think you struggle also because the other team is better than you technically and tactically and physically. So I just think they've done, for me, they've overachieved. If they finish fourth this season, which they still very much can, because I think for me Juve are not in the title race anymore, so you've got the 2 Milan teams for the title, and then you've got Juve, Atalanta, Lazio, Napoli and Roma all for that fourth place, third and fourth place. And if Roma do it, I think there will be such an incredibly overachievement.
For me, there's no question that Fonseca has been
incredible. I know they had their issues, but
Zaniolo and Dzeko up front, you're talking about your leader, your goal scorer, a guy who was critical for you last season. Zaniolo, arguably your best player. And then at the back, you know, Chris Smalling was phenomenal last year.
Completely.
And then, obviously, in this game, they're missing Ibanez. Hopefully, he gets fit again. I mean, he has played most of the games. But still, with Ibanez and Smalling and Kumbula as well, who they signed, who's supposed to be, you know, who they're very high on. It's just a different defense. It's
completely.
It's just a different setup, a different look.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough of that. Let's talk about Arsenal. Let's talk about Arsenal's big win away to Leicester.
Big, big win.
You saw this as season-defining?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's one of the biggest wins that they have this season, probably with the Chelsea win on Boxing Day, because that one turned their season around. And I really think that winning at Leicester after being 1-0 down away from home against a team like that, okay, even without James Maddison, which is a huge loss, and we'll talk about that in a bit.
Thankful for Arsenal, and Dennis Pratt, no, it's a long list of people out
there. But it's more Maddison than anything
else. And then
Harvey Barnes
gets injured,
and Johnny Evans is still your, you know.
Of course, yeah.
But to do it that way, without Aubameyang, because clearly you could see the priority in Mikel Arteta's mind that the league was not so much the priority. Clearly the Europa League is to go and try to win it, and that's the only way you can qualify for Champions League now. You can't finish fourth in the league, and I think that's why you rested Saka and Aubameyang and Odegaard
and Thomas Partey,
who's coming back from injury, even Bellerin if you want to, and to do it with almost a B team like this to go and win in that way. They played so well. I thought tactically they really outsmarted Leicester, who, again, are not the same team without James Maddison. Right. Of course they're not. But they could not find an answer to anything.
But this is my thing, right? I get the issue with prioritising the Europa League at this point. Fair enough. But I always look at Arsenal in terms of growth. And you know I've said this in day one, which is why I had my issues with the Willian signing. How are you growing if these people you have out there go out there and play really well, right? And Pepe is another one, right? But you don't know if they're going to be part of your future. So what does it actually mean? So you can see these guys go out and play, but like, if Arsenal hypothetically are competing for the title in 2 years, Pablo Mari is not going to be there. No. I doubt El Neni's going
to
be
there. But you need squad
members. I know
members.
Willian ain't going to be there.
You know squad members as well. You can't just have your 11 who now are going to be the same in 2 years. You need other bodies, right?
All right, so let me turn it around. If Saka and Odegaard and all those guys had played, would they have played differently?
No, I think it would have been the same. I just think it's remarkable to do it when some who have been your best players in the last few weeks were not even on the pitch. And I think he showed a lot of characters. I think he showed, again, that tactically your squad, and I mean the whole squad, not just the 11, most likely starting 11, but everybody is on board to exactly what you want to do, the patterns of play, how you build from the back, how you go forwards. And yesterday, you looked at the two teams and you would have never thought that Leicester had been that good this season, because, again, I think that Arsenal tactically just outsmarted them, played so much better.
It's funny, and I completely agree with you. And I think this is significant, right? Because, so Leicester have half a dozen players out.
Yeah.
But effectively, Arsenal do too, some by choice, some not by choice, right? And to see these guys go in and really buy into what Arteta wanted to do and execute, I think that's significant. But my question goes back to then, why are they so up and down otherwise? Like, why do they go and play Benfica and then they nearly, not that Benfica are a terrible side, they nearly get knocked out? I mean, how does that work?
I still think that they struggle a bit against teams that sit really that defend well and sit deep against the back five, like we saw against Benfica in the two games, for example. Leicester on Sunday were more willing to play. Of course, they're playing side, especially at home. You know, they went to the Emirates, if you remember, and won with that late Jamie Vardy goal because they sat really deep like they did at City. But at home, it's different. They played. They were 1-0 up as well. They played. They played 4-4-2. But Arsenal found a way of beating that formation by the way they played, you know, with Tierney on the left-hand side. That was really good. Again, I thought Arteta's changes, Odegaard in the second half, and Pepe. And Luis Campos did an interview in the Telegraph on Sunday or Saturday where he said, oh, but Pepe always plays better second season. And I think we've seen a better Pepe this year. It's not an amazing player, suddenly. I'm not saying that. But certainly he's better than last year. And so I
got to call Luis Campos on this. Like, oh, he's always better second season. This is what I was talking about before with Pioli, right?
Yeah.
Your sample size is what?
But
nothing.
Still,
you go to Lille, he settles in.
It was the same at Angers. But even, anyway, my point is more that Arteta improved of those players. Like, he's improved Tierney and improved Saka and improved Smith Rowe, of course. But also Pepe, I think.
All right. Podcast listeners, we're going to get more into this in the podcast extra and go a little more granular on this Arsenal team. All right, let's show Leicester a little bit more love before we get more granular on Arsenal. See, I've used the word granular twice.
I know. You like that word. You like that word.
How big is now Barnes' injury as well? I mean, he's been kind of doing it with smoke and mirrors this season, Brendan Rodgers. Mm. And, you know, when we look at who's going to win Manager of the Year in the Premier League this year, you know, if Pep doesn't lose games between now and the end of the season, it might be him. If David Moyes gets West Ham in the top four, maybe it should be him. Yeah, by the way, if we can digress now on Moyes, remember the whole thing when people were like, David Moyes has been Manager of the Year in the Premier League three times, and I think Mourinho never.
Yeah.
And yet Mourinho's the three titles. Would it be hilarious if Moyes adds a fourth? Like, and it would be,
but
whatever. It's, you know,
if they finish top four, he's got a really, really good chance.
If they finish top four, yeah, they do.
Definitely.
I mean, that's the question. If West Ham and Leicester both finish top four, who gets it?
It has to be Moyes. It has to be Moyes.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, really. As much as I love Brendan Rodgers, it has to be Moyes.
You love Brendan Rodgers?
Yeah, I like him. You know what? I like the work he did, and I interviewed him.
Liverpool fans coming in 3, 2, 1.
The Brendan Rodgers of now, the one of 5 years ago who made mistakes, who was young, and who, we loved that back then. But
I think, look, as a manager, I don't think he was bad back then. I think there was more issues off the pitch with Brendan Rodgers, which didn't make him very likable.
Yeah.
But since then, he's a lot more likable.
And he's a much better manager, right?
He's always been really good.
Yeah, but he's a much better now even than he was at Liverpool.
I don't know. I go back even before that at Swansea, some of the stuff that they did. Yeah, he's better now. Maybe he's more experienced. But he's always been a tremendous, tremendous manager. Mm. I think what he's done this season, it's been remarkable given the injuries that they've had, given, you know, this isn't Jamie Vardy we're seeing, even though he's still scoring a lot of goals. It's a Vardy who necessarily plays a different way because he's not fully fit. He might dispute this, but I don't think he's as quick as he was either.
No. Certainly his game has evolved.
Time passes.
Yeah, but you remember a few weeks ago you said this is James,
this is James Maddison.
Yeah, when they beat Spurs, I think, at home, and he's got to go away from home or something like that. And you said this is James Maddison's team. And of course it is, which means that when he's not there anymore, it's not the same team at all. No. And you could see it. We saw it against Slavia Prague. And we mentioned, you know, we didn't mention it because the game was on Thursday night. But we said it before that when he wasn't there, you could see that the lack of creativity. Even that when Tielemans has the ball, he's such the usual, okay, I've got the ball. And then you try to serve it and give it to Maddison. When he's in there, it's such a complete different team.
So I'm looking at the table now. And yes, I am holding up my phone. You're not supposed to do this when you're being filmed. But hey. Leicester are on 49 points.
Yeah.
They are 5 points clear of Chelsea, who are fifth. I want to say I don't see them dropping out, but 5 points with 12 games to go is not much of a lead.
It's not much, especially without Barnes and Maddison for at least a few games. Certainly for Barnes, it looked like a really bad injury for someone who was so much in such great form. And also, I think someone who plays quite differently, because he takes on players which Maddison doesn't really do, as in a full pace on the wing like this. He comes inside and shoots a lot. And I thought he was a good complement to Vardy, to Maddison, and to whoever plays on the right-hand side, whether that's Albrighton or Ricardo Pereira or whoever. And without him, it's a different story. Without him and Maddison, it's even worse. And this is just the thing. Where they were really lucky this weekend is that West Ham lost, Chelsea drew, United drew. And because otherwise, that defeat against Arsenal could have cost them far more than actually he ended up doing.
And I think without Dennis Pratt too, who becomes important Pratt's, when those guys are out.
Yeah, exactly. Who's a Maddison replacement.
It's funny. I want to give a shout out to Mark Albrighton, because, you know, obviously he had the early chapter of his career at Villa. Yeah. And it looked like he was completely lost. When I wrote my Claudio Ranieri book, I talked about how, like, you know, Albrighton was a big part of their title-winning side, and, you know, and how, like, wonderful that, you know, he's not going to be remembered for his career petering out, but he adds this incredible chapter to his career, right? And then I thought, okay, that's it. But he's adding a third chapter this year, which is incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Because after that, there was a period when he wasn't playing, when he was out, when he was slowed by injuries, whatever, you know, and it's still Mark Albrighton, with all due respect. You know, we're not talking about Ryan Giggs here, right?
But it's like Wes Morgan. You know, you thought he was there in the squad and maybe he would play now and again in the domestic cups. Or he could always come on for the last 10, 15 minutes if you're in the lead. Yeah. And yet he became a starter again and been so good, like at his age, to still running up and down that right-hand side. Yeah. It's pretty remarkable.
Tremendous story. Now, we are on Arsenal.
Yeah.
Okay. I get the sense that you're pretty bullish here.
No, it's not that. I think the Benfica win in the last minute, like the way they did, is good because they never come back from behind. This season, only once at Southampton in the league, they were 1-0 down and they came back and won 3-1. Quite similar to what they did against Leicester. But they did against Benfica, and scoring that late goal, I think, gave them a lot of confidence, a lot of momentum. In 2 weeks is the North London derby against Spurs. That could be a really good game. They're 10th. They're not going to finish 4th, okay? But I think
I'm going to consult my magic Premier League table here.
Go on.
To see, they're on 37 points.
Yeah, because I'm struggling with my points. Obviously, I said earlier that United were 12 points clear, and you know, which
they need to make up 8 points. But the problem isn't so much making up 8 points.
Is there what, 6 teams ahead of them?
Yeah, is that they're 10th?
So,
you don't see that happening.
Nah, if they were 5th, and you say, okay, maybe. If things go their way, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think so. So I can see why you want to prioritize the Europa League. They play Olympiacos in the last 16, is the revenge from last season. Then you know that at least United and Milan, one of them is not going to be there. So suddenly there's one less favorite in the competition. So I think you could go for it completely. And if you win the Europa League and you finish, I don't know, 12th or 13th in the Premier League, no problem. The problem is, if you finish 13th but don't win the Europa League, then suddenly the season is really poor. And I think it's just a very dangerous...
And you're left with a lot of tough decisions to make in the summer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I said this about... I mean, I'm assuming Odegaard is there to help win the Europa League, because I don't see how he's going to... You know, I said this when he went on loan, right?
Yeah.
He's either going to do really badly, and then Arsenal don't want to keep him.
Yeah.
Or he does really well, in which case Real Madrid says, hey, come back here. Zizou's gone. No, just kidding.
Yeah, no, but maybe, of course. You know, or someone else.
Or somebody else comes. Or Real Madrid says, hey, we need cash to buy Mbappe.
Yeah.
Oh, look, he's been phenomenal at the end of the season. And then, you know, Pep rocks up and says, hey, Mikel. Yeah. Remember when you walked out on me in mid-season?
Yeah.
Enjoy this.
Million. Yeah, yeah, no, maybe, yeah.
So, to me, you know, it just seems like this is a lot of gambling, a lot of putting all your chips in the middle of the table for instant success, which is what they did, obviously, with go back to Willian and Aubameyang.
Yeah.
It's a tough situation. I hope for Arsenal fans that it's not the kind of situation where it results where to balance the book to be able to survive, you know, and survive in terms of rebuild and bring in players that you need, you have to start sacrificing your assets. And I mean sacrificing Tierney and Emile Smith Rowe. Tierney, Saka, possibly Emile Smith Rowe. That would be really, really damaging, I think.
It would be.
Because they don't really have any other saleable assets, right? Nobody's going to come in and give you like, 50 million for
Lacazette with 1 year left.
With 1 year left, Alba with his salary,
even
Thomas Partey, you know, and I know people got super excited and, okay, great, but you're all in with him. You're not going to shift him at this stage. So you better hope that he stays fit and he contributes. Enough of that. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
New look for Ronald Koeman's Barcelona. They switch to 3-4-1-2. Dembele plays up front. They beat Sevilla 2-0. But Jules, it's kind of overshadowed by the fact that their former president, Jose Maria Bartomeu, and their former CEO, Oscar Grau, arrested on Monday morning.
Yes, you're right. Great performance to say. They never win against big teams this season, but they have against Sevilla. Best performance. Great. Let's see if they stick with the formation. And for the arrest, it's the Barca gate. As you know, the former CEO, president, and president Bartomeu, Oscar Grau, and other people at the club as well, to see if there were some issues with the accounts, with the money, and everything.
Elections coming up in a few days. This could be big.
Inter beat up Genoa 3-0. Former Old Trafford alumni get on the score sheet. Gab, they look good.
They did. It's a lot easier to play in the lead when you score after 33 seconds, like of Lukaku course. Did. But yeah, Lukaku once again, phenomenal. Yeah. And, you know, they're ticking all the boxes. They're ticking over nicely.
Yeah.
No goals at Stamford Bridge between Chelsea and Manchester United. Jules, your boy Thomas Tuchel is still undefeated. But should that have been a penalty for Callum Hudson-Odoi's handball?
Not sure. It could, of course. I think some referees could have given it, and then the VAR would have gone away with it, like going along with it. VAR went along with the referee as well, saying that he didn't think it was a handball.
They made sure he looked at it again.
Yeah. I've got no problem. Some would give it because you could say.
I have zero problem with this, and it annoys me that I was watching, you know, it'd be pundits saying, oh, everybody's confused, the law keeps changing. No, it doesn't keep changing. There's still an element of discretion. You're supposed to be dynamic. Stuart Atwell did exactly the right thing, and I think VAR did the right thing in having Atwell look at it,
because
it's highly unlikely he saw everything clearly the first time. So I have no problem whatsoever with this.
Me neither, but Tuchel said it was a high quality game. Thomas, it wasn't. I was there like you, it wasn't. It was bad. So many bad touches, bad passes, bad decision making. Everything was bad.
But a good save from David De Gea.
Yeah, apart from that. Gareth Bale gets only his third Premier League start of the season. He scores two and sets up another one for Harry Kane, and Tottenham destroy Burnley 4-0. Gab, is this the new beginning for him and Jose? Have they kissed and made up?
Yeah, there's so much thought to like, ooh, is Gareth Bale happy? Then he says, oh, I was always happy even when you weren't playing. I don't
Not
know,
really.
Man. Look, it's
Not
Burnley. Really. They play in transition.
Scored after 68 seconds.
Yeah, again. and then they score all the goals in transition. I got to see more. We know Gareth Bale can do this.
Yeah.
We've seen him do this in the Europa League.
Exactly.
You know, playing Burnley is a bit like playing the Europa League.
Ooh.
Bayern Munich beat Cologne 5-1, but Jules, this wasn't quite as comfortable as the scoreline suggests, was it?
No, you're right. Cologne came back to 2-1. They were a bit shaky again, Bayern Munich, especially defensively. I mean,
Choupo-Moting on the wing, you like that?
Choupo-Moting. I mean, he scored the first goal, okay, but I mean, like, come on. This is not where they're going to win the title or not. Those games, they're always going to win it because they're too good anyway. Eventually.
And it helps when you can bring in Muller and Coleman off the bench and Muller and Gnabry, I meant, sorry.
Yeah. To the next one, basically. Cristiano Ronaldo scores again, but Juventus are held 1-1 by Verona. And Gab, it looked like Andrea Pirlo actually lost his cool after the game. They were not good.
They were terrible.
Terrible.
They were really, really bad in the first half. I think the setup was fine with Kulusevski, Chiesa, and Bernardeschi kind of making runs behind Cristiano. But they were terrible in the first half. Cristiano puts them in the lead, and then they play with fear. And if you play with fear, you have a problem. Now, a lot of guys out, I understand it. But the mentality of the guys you send on the pitch should be the same.
Yep.
By the way, shout out, new name. You probably know who he is. But they had this kid, Fagioli, central midfielder. He played the last 20 minutes. How about?
It's good.
We see if this guy can play. He actually is a midfield playmaker, more so than Bentancourt.
Oh, God.
Liverpool avoid making it 5 straight defeats in the Premier League by beating Sheffield United 2-0. Jules, they're back on track.
No, but it was a win. It's a take the win. They were still, again, a bit shaky at the back. Not great going forward. I thought Curtis Jones had a really good game. And
he's a bit special.
We've said for many weeks now, starting more, playing more, which he's starting to do. And he's good, but they still have a lot of improvement to do. Manchester City, on the other hand, it makes it 20 consecutive wins in a row. Well, obviously, they're consecutive. In all competitions, Gab, after beating West Ham 2-1 at the Etihad, do you want to talk about that incredible run? Or more to reflect on the fact that Kun Aguero finally started a game in the Premier League for the first time since October.
Well, I'll find a way to combine both. The interesting thing is obviously that they're winning a bunch of games consecutively. They're scoring a lot. They're averaging 2 goals a game, which is a lot for any team, but not for Pep Guardiola teams. I think this could be the lowest scoring Guardiola team ever, potentially.
Yeah, definitely.
If they're on track for this. I think we saw Aguero in there, is that the reason? You know, I don't think this is the real Aguero. I don't think we'll see much of him.
It was a game of, you know, just to come back.
But I think Pep is onto something when he says we need to convert chances better. And we need to create better chances. So he's watching. He's a perfectionist.
No.
Sticking with Manchester City, The Athletic are reporting that they're in a row with Opta over whether victories on penalties should be counted as wins when compiling statistics. This is clearly very, very important. The City say they should. Opta do not. Jules, can you settle it for us?
Of course they should. Who wins the game at the end? After the penalties. Who wins the game?
Games last 90 minutes, and so extra time and penalties should not.
They don't. I disagree with you completely. If you win on penalties, so or if you win on you know, scissor paper stone, I don't care. You win it. It counts. Atletico Madrid bounce back to beat Villarreal 2-0. Gab, how big is this? And why was Joao Felix so grumpy at the end?
So this is really big because obviously you know, they'd lost to Levante and lost to Chelsea and stuff. Villarreal are a good team. Villarreal deserve more.
Yeah, I mean, they played well in the second half, especially.
Atleti got a goal, an own goal, and whatever. And the Joao Felix one. I think it's because, I mean, there are different interpretations of Spanish media. I'm pretty sure he wasn't having a go at Simeone because otherwise Joao Felix would be a little puddle of oil and would be forgotten right now.
Yeah. He would have disappeared.
But it's good to see him score. He needs to do more. Yeah, he needs to do more. And if he wants to drag Atleti forward, he needs to do more.
Yeah.
Borussia Dortmund beat up Arminia Bielefeld 3-0 as Rainier comes off the bench. He scores his first senior goal. Jules, he's 19. He's on loan from Real Madrid, who paid $30 million for him. But he hardly ever plays because there's so much competition at Dortmund.
Yeah.
Why was he loaned to Dortmund in the first place?
Wrong club. But he was the wrong club when it happened. And we all said, like, really? Why?
At least he got off. At least he got the score.
He played a little bit, but hey, it's not enough. Erling Haaland didn't score, though he did get an assist. But Gab, what's the story that Manchester United missed out on signing him in the summer 2018 just because they got their time zone wrong?
Yeah, it's a story that's being reported in the Mirror. I'm a little skeptical about the people trying to kind of go and reconstruct transfers that didn't happen, but it's a good story, so let's tell it anyway. He was at Molde at the time, who were managed by
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, yes. Mourinho was still at Old Trafford. He was available for just $3 million. He was negotiating with Salzburg. Manchester United said, okay, yeah, hey, okay, let's arrange to talk to your agent, Jim Solbakken, who's also Solskjaer's agent. And then the question was it 9 a.m. European time or 9 a.m. UK time? They thought it was 9 a.m. UK time. Solbakken didn't pick up the phone because we expected him to call earlier. And the rest is history. Moise Kean opens the scoring and Paris Saint-Germain roll over Dijon as Kylian Mbappe bags two. Jules, your thoughts?
That's all. You take the win. Dijon are so bad. And there's nothing you can take away from that game. But it's a win. It's a big win because they did this title race that we will mention a bit later on. It's so tight and so close in Ligue 1 that they can't drop any more points now anywhere. Dijon or any other place in the country. So good on them. Kylian Mbappe wanted more. He wanted to score more halftime. We saw him saying to Marquinhos, come on, let's go and score 6-7. I want a hat-trick. I want to come home with the matchday ball. Didn't happen. But at least he's got two.
Who gets to keep the match day ball? What? If you don't score three, if you don't get the hat trick, you can't keep the ball?
No. The ball stays where they are.
By the way, Moise Kean's emergence, if this continues,
so
it can.
Good.
You know, it's easy. He's ready. You can just sell Mbappe. Sell Mbappe, and you've got Moise Kean there to.
I would not go that far, but certainly they would try to keep him, whether that's another loan or if Everton are not too demanding on the price, try to make it permanent. But, you know. Gab, Leipzig stayed 2 points behind Bayern in the Bundesliga, but it took a two-goal comeback and the release of the only living Sorloth in captivity to get it done.
Yes, they unleashed the Sorloth. Look, incredible game. Look, Gladbach are on a terrible run.
Yeah.
The players are annoyed with Marco Rose for the big Judas
act. Of course.
I've talked about this before. Like, I don't think this should be allowed or is healthy, but whatever. But yeah, very unlucky to go. You know, there was a penalty, there was a defensive error. They find themselves two down, despite the fact that they're frankly battering Gladbach.
Completely.
And you could kind of feel, you know, young manager, this is where things unravel. Yeah. And then people could have been like, yeah, well, Bayern always win because it's so mentally tough. No. Hey, guess what? Guess what, Bayern fans? Leipzig ain't going away.
No.
Or certainly not this weekend.
Definitely not.
It was tremendous. Sorloth came in. He wreaked havoc. He set up Nkunku's goal.
Yeah.
And little by little, they got back into it. They created chances beginning to end in this game.
Yeah.
And it was only fair that they should get the winner at the very end in injury time.
First time ever, I think, since they're in the Bundesliga. So I know that's only 5 years, that they go back from a two-goal deficit to win it. So,
yeah,
hey,
see?
Wonder.
Nagelsmann's got some stones,
yeah.
Right? Real Madrid played Monday night against Real Sociedad, so it's a good excuse to speculate on Sergio Ramos's future like we do every week. But let me give you a little twist. Who's more likely to stay at their club? Sergio Ramos to Real Madrid or Lionel Messi at Barcelona?
Both of them. And we've said...
They're both staying.
This week, Marca said, it's more likely now that Sergio stays. And we know he's going to stay. Those situations always happen, especially with Sergio Ramos. He's been at Real Madrid, 15 years? And almost every year said that, he might leave. Well, no, he's not going to leave. We all know that. And we all know how the story ends. And with Messi, I think we both agree on that, right? That
yeah.
We feel now, that Messi will stay.
It's interesting. I think with Ramos, I think it might also depend how the season ends. You know, if they win another Champions League, I don't know. There could be another chapter where he goes to Miami or whatever that.
Okay?
I'm putting everybody in Miami. With Messi, like, people who are much closer to Barcelona than we are, who are based in Barcelona, they say 100% nailed on, he's leaving, he's going to City, blah, blah, blah. But we hear this every week.
Every week.
I don't think anything's nailed on with Messi because it just doesn't make sense to me. But
I agree. Schalke lose to Stuttgart 5-1, which isn't a surprise considering how many games they've lost, and they only won two league games since 2019 anywhere. But Gab, what happened afterwards, though, was more remarkable.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Christian Gross getting sacked. I think it's the way it's happened. Obviously, they're going to have their fifth manager now this season. It was the fact that there was a full-on revolt from the players. But curiously, not the players who have been there throughout, some of the guys they got in January. Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, reportedly Shkodran Mustafi, saying this guy doesn't even know our name, doesn't know who we are.
Yeah.
There was a sense that maybe Schalke now just playing the kids, kind of tanking the rest of the season, accepting the fact that they're going to be in the...
Nine points behind, I think.
Okay, but hang on, if you're going to do that, why bring back Huntelaar? Why not have some respect for one of your greatest ever players and not make him come back and hobble around as part of the Muppet Show?
Yeah.
Why bring back Mustafi?
I mean, he didn't have to go either. They didn't force him to go back.
No.
So he knew that it was bad there.
I mean, presumably, if you bring back Mustafi, who, Mustafi's a nice guy, but he's not playing for free. And I'm sure he hasn't tricked Arsenal into paying all his wages either.
No.
So why not respect these people? Why not have some clarity of thought here? But they got rid of the director of football.
They got rid of the
fitness guy. Look, this is an argument for another time. It's really interesting, though. It has to do with the way German clubs are set up, the 50-plus. People who want to get rid of the 50-plus-1 rule, who want to have, we need one powerful owner, they're going to go and cite this as evidence.
Yeah.
I think this is just bad management.
Completely.
It's got
for years. For many,
rule.
Many,
for many
years
many
now.
Years.
One of the biggest clubs in the country. This is ridiculous.
And it's sad. It's
really
sad.
Completely sad.
Four teams and 4 points. Lille, Paris Saint-Germain, Lyon, and Monaco. Ligue 1 is the tightest race in a major European league.
It is, man.
Jules, you want to play the percentage?
Let's go. This is a tough one because
Lille on 59 points.
Yeah.
They have 2 points over Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah. And then Lyon and Monaco with a lot of big games to be played between them. So you'll have a PSG Lyon, you'll have a PSG Lille. You also have Lille to play both Lyon and Monaco. You'll have Marseille, who at some point will be a bit of the referee because they've just drew with Lyon. They play Lille on Wednesday night.
Drew some controversy against Lyon as well.
So there's still plenty of points to be won against each other, lost against other team or won against other team. I would go PSG as 40% favorite simply because they've been there before. And I think they're the most experienced, even if they have the Champions League and the others don't have any European games. I still think PSG have to be slight favorite. And then I think for me, it's 20-20-20.
Even Monaco.
Yeah, they play so well under Kovac. They have the best run of form at the moment. They won 9 of the last 10 and the other one was a draw. They beat PSG twice this season. They've got so much depth. I mean, Monaco at the weekend were drawing. They brought on Jovetic.
Against Brest.
Yeah, but they brought on Fabregas, Jovetic, Crépin Diata, the Senegalese international who just arrived from Club Bruges, and another big player. They've got so much depth that
and they
I
have
think
my boy Diop too,
and Sofiane Diop, who's been amazing, although he's not Paris born and bred. So listen, I really think 40-20-20-20 is a really good, and I could even go 35 PSG and push the other up higher a bit more, because I think it's really tight and really
indecisive. I defer to your knowledge of Ligue 1. I think you got to go higher with Paris Saint-Germain.
Nah,
I think the 4-point lead that Lille have over Monaco has got to mean something. I think Kovac, I don't know, maybe
you
I'm
see,
biased.
You
but
see, no. It's good. Zhuangzhou FC are the defending champions of the Chinese Super League. But why were they dissolved at the weekend then, Gab? What happened?
So this is a weird story. This has to do with Suning, who own they own Jiangsu, and of course they own Inter as well. They're under pressure from the Chinese government, as are a lot of Chinese companies that operate abroad, to kind of bring funds back into China.
Yeah,
they've sold 24% of Suning has been sold to two state-owned Chinese conglomerates. I'm going to guess these guys don't enjoy losing tons of money in the Chinese Super League.
No.
And I think also the Chinese government, you remember we had the whole, the football project 2030 or whatever, China. I think some of the steam's gone out of that. So Jiangsu said, look, we're gonna concentrate on our core business, and it's not bankrolling Jiangsu. It's sad because obviously they're the defending champions. They just said, oh, we're shutting down. I'm assuming. I would hope somebody else comes in and takes over the club.
Because
it would be crazy otherwise. People made a big deal of the implications for Inter.
Yeah.
And just, they've made it, soon they've made it clear that they're looking for other partners. They were in talks to sell the whole club, but they value the club at $1 billion.
Yeah.
I think it's going to happen. I think they're happy with minority partners. And also they need to refinance about $300 million worth of bonds that expire in 2022. So it is tricky, but... Mm. Thing is, Zhang Jindong, who runs Suning and obviously therefore owns Inter, he sold the stake for about $2 billion. So he got a little bit of money in his pocket
money,
now. I think it does give Inter a little bit more breathing space in some ways, but they still need to sort this out. Mm. Big game in Portugal, and it finishes 0-0 between Porto and Sporting. Jules, could Sporting really win their first title since 2002?
Well, I think they will, Gab. They're 9 points clear of Braga, who won on Sunday night to go over Porto at second place. But they're still unbeaten, Sporting, which is an incredible story. Ruben Amorim, who's such a young manager, 36 years old, who they got from Braga in the summer. They paid 30 million euros for him. That was the sort of release clause that, you know, as the Portuguese managers have usually in their contract. That's a lot of money for a manager when you're Sporting, you know, and you've 3 years ago, you were in crisis, you had your ultras attacking your own players and everything. And yet, look at this. It's an incredible resurrection, incredible story of the work that Ruben Amorim is doing there. They've got young players for some of them. They were very clever in who they bought in the summer as well. And I don't think this is a very vintage season, because Porto and Benfica have been really average in the league. But good on Sporting. They were
seems
by far
crazy that
team.
A club like Sporting, the talent that's come through there.
Can you imagine?
It's been nearly two decades, you know,
incredible.
From Bruno Fernandes to this young man they call Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, something like that.
It seems incredible. Crazy that they haven't that they haven't won since 2002.
And the problem is, I'm not sure how much they would be able to build on this title, because very, very soon Ruben Amorim is going to go to a much bigger club, whether it's in Portugal or abroad. And then some of the players that made them so good this season will go as well. So you'll have to start all over again like they did in 2002.
You don't need me to tell you who his agent is, do you?
No, of course not. Valencia lose 3-0 to Getafe, but Gab, were you surprised to see my boy and the other Gabriel, Paulista, this one, break down in tears afterwards? He looked really, really emotional and sad.
Yeah, they pointed out to him that, like, it's more likely that Valencia will get relegated than play in the Champions League. And he started crying. And, I mean, he is obviously feels very strongly about the club. He's not from Valencia. The dude's Brazilian. Mm. But it just reinforces how sad it is and what these owners, you know, Peter Lim and the other people who've been involved with the club, how this club has been run.
They've wasted it. They've
run
ruined
into
it.
The ground. One bad decision
incredible.
After another. Meriton Capital, all this nonsense. You know, and it's situations like these that, you know, you kind of, you know how like in the NFL, like owners have to approve a new owner coming in? You can't really do it in football. Premier League fit and proper is the best you get. But like, you can't, it's just so sad to have somebody doing this.
That's crazy.
To a football club. And really, getting away with it scot-free. Yeah. Because, yeah, he put some money at the beginning, but he's not losing that much money off
it.
He doesn't care. Really, really sad.
Yeah.
And if you want to make you depress yourself even further, Jules, look at the players who've come through Valencia over the years.
Oh, my God.
And just imagine.
We talked about sporting before. Yeah. I know. Same story.
More refereeing folly in the Premier League, courtesy of Lee Mason in the West Brom v Brighton game. Jules, if Brighton go down by a point, they'll be furious and they'll be right, no?
I don't know what to say anymore, Gab. I just don't know how you can reach such a poor level of refereeing.
All right, just tell us what happened. We're not talking about the overall refereeing, right? And by the way, Brighton, you did miss two penalties. So
yeah, you missed two penalties. You know, but
smaller,
that free kick,
smallest violin. However,
it's a free kick on the edge of the box. Luis Dunk, clearly you can tell, wants to play quickly. He says to Lee Mason, the referee, can I take it quickly? Lee Mason says yes. Blows his whistle. At that time, the West Brom wall is still getting together. Sam Johnstone is on his post to put that wall right. Luis Dunk takes the penalty, takes the free kick, scores it. Like many players have done before, taking quick Arsenal and Thierry Henry against Chelsea at Highbury all those years ago. Luis Dunk himself did it with Brighton a few seasons ago as well. And then Lee Mason panics, blows the whistle again before the ball actually crosses the line, but then gives the goal. So everybody in Brighton goes like, yeah, West Brom go mad. So he goes, hang on a minute, what shall I do now? Hey, let's call VAR, maybe they can help. VAR just said, well, we can't really help, but you actually blew your whistle a second time before the ball crossed the line, so you can technically not allow the goal. And he was disallowed. And I'm just like, what are you doing? And it's not the first time Lee Mason makes some mistakes. He makes mistakes all the time.
Yeah, and I think what's worse, what's really concerning here is this guy's state of mind. Now, for those who forget, Lee Mason was also the VAR. If I remember Mike Dean, West Ham, and Souček.
And Mitrovic and the red card.
And before that with, I think he was also the VAR on the Bednarek red card when they lost 9-0 to United.
And to United.
This is not somebody making a technical error, not seeing something properly. This is something, somebody having some sort of brain episode.
Well, yeah,
where
very often.
And this whole thing about let me blow it again, based on what?
What for? Did he panic because he saw that West Brom were not in position?
Mike Dean received death threats, okay? So clearly, you know, the crazies need to be dealt with if they're going to go, and or the criminals need to be dealt with if they're going to make death threats.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to make death threats against Lee Mason. However, there has to be accountability.
Oh, come on.
There
please.
Has to be accountability.
I don't want to see him refereeing again for a long time.
I've advocated. And there is a Premier League table, right? I'm going to call the merit table.
Yeah.
I don't see why this isn't public. Because you know what? We judge players, and players lose their jobs, and managers lose their jobs based on how they perform. This is the one industry where we have to pretend that everybody's equal, even though they're not, because we know the better referees get the bigger games.
Yeah.
And I think there has to be some level of accountability.
Completely.
And I'll tell you what I would also like to see is, how about we lift the lid on people talking? How about Lee Mason comes out and says, you guys, I'm really sorry. I got distracted. Yep. I screwed up. You know, it's my mistake.
Yep.
That would make him seem more human, and we could understand it, right? Yeah. You wouldn't be happy with it, and there would still be consequences. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Because this is what everybody else in the game has to do, managers, players, and so on.
Yeah.
But no, and this is a problem for the PGMOL. These two, Mason and Dean, what's been going on this season?
Completely. Fernando Torres retired in 2019 from the game, ending his career in Japan. Gab, what has he been doing since?
Well, I think he's been locked in a gym.
I could not get out.
I'm a little late to this. You told me, but didn't you see the pictures a month ago?
Yeah,
no, Jules, I don't follow Fernando Torres on TikTok like you do, right? I don't live stream his workouts. But the man looks like a professional wrestler. His
incredible.
Arms are enormous. And what's weird is,
he's like the strongest man.
I met Fernando Torres in his first season in England.
Yeah, so photo of you and Kenny Dalglish and our friend Guillaume Balaguer.
And the king, Kenny Dalglish.
Yeah,
no less. He was desperate to meet Dalglish. He'd never met him. And so we arranged a meeting. We had a lovely meal together. But, you know, he's a little thin, spindly guy. And all of a sudden this. I don't know. Look, whatever makes you happy. I think it's kind of cool, man. It's
really
a total
cool
before and after situation.
Find something. You know how we say the players miss the game so much that they need to find something else. Otherwise they get, I don't know, depressed or thing, which happens a lot. Well, he found working out in the gym, clearly.
I think it's time for the McMahons to be in touch.
Yes.
All right, George, shall we come back on Thursday and do this all over again?
Yes, definitely, Gab.
All righty. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.